This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Wow.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host Chris Broad and we're joined as always by top London radio DJ and certified Japanophile, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing?
I'm good, Chris. It's a bit of a switcheroo. Usually I'm recording in the morning and you're recording in the evening. It's currently midnight where I am and it's 9 o'clock in the morning where you are. This is the earliest you've ever done a podcast, Chris. It's wonderful. I'm excited by the whole idea.
I never do anything in the morning, Pete, because my voice is weird. Listen to my voice, ladies and gentlemen. It sounds... You know, you have that morning voice where your voice just sounds broken.
Oh, yeah.
I think it sounds kind of baritone. I sound like I could do a movie trailer voice.
Hello. Come in soon. I'm just a man in a hotel room. Alone.
I don't know how you do it. How do you do things in the morning, Pete? How do you do these podcasts normally?
Well, they're actually quite difficult to do because you haven't spoken to anybody yet and you're not up to speed. And whenever I've done sort of like a voiceover at like, even like at 11 o'clock, I wake up at 10 o'clock usually because I work quite late. I wake up at 10, go in for 11, and I can't speak, I can't read, I'm tired. It's difficult.
It's not easy. Yeah. But I'm going to do my best. I've got my little canned Georgia coffee. It's horrible. It tastes like just refined sugar mixed with sick. It's not pleasant, but it should take me through for the remainder of the podcast. So today, guys, we're going to give you an update on what we've been doing. The cycle that I'm on is pretty much over now. I'm going to be heading back to my home in Sendai soon, and the podcast will resume as normal. So today, I thought I'd just talk about what we've done and what's been going on. Biggest news is I finally decided, Pete, to get a tattoo.
Oh, wow.
I want to be cool like you.
This is pretty momentous, isn't it? I mean, bearing in mind my tattoos are Cat in the Hat and a ghost pirate LeChuck on the leg. I don't have any cool tattoos, but I did apply some. Remember I was in, for Halloween, I did Goro Majima from the Yakuza series. I printed out and applied some fake tattoos. I was asked to put my jacket back on by a couple of bouncers because they don't like arm tattoos. And then I showed them that they were all fake, so he was fine with it. It seems so strange, the difference between fake and real.
I've been meaning to ask you what you did for Halloween. So after Pete and I went our separate ways on the trip, ladies and gentlemen, Pete went to Tokyo, he went to Halloween, and I just received this stream of photos throughout the week of Pete in various weird situations. There's one of you like topless with these tattoos all down your arm. Presumably those are the tattoos that got you thrown out of a club.
That is, yeah.
Or rejected from entering the club. What did you do? What were your adventures in Tokyo like?
It was good, man. I mean, every time I go to Japan, I sort of get a bit itchy feet, and I always find myself sort of going, well, I need to go here, and I need to go here, and I need to go here. But in reality, like, it's actually quite nice to sort of spend 7 days in one place, because otherwise you just find yourself sort of... I'm a little bit like you. I'm not an amazing morning person. Having to sort of get up in the morning and move out your Airbnb or move out of your hotel and go walkies and get on a train or whatever, just a bit of a pain in the bum, really. So yeah, it was quite nice to just kind of relax a little bit. I briefly popped into Kanazawa. That was fun. Never been to Kanazawa.
Went to Kanazawa.
Yeah, popped into Kanazawa. Because I've never
been. Are
you
sure you're not
getting
it mixed up with Kanagawa? Because everyone always does.
Oh no, which one's Hanagawa?
Kanagawa is the one around the back of Japan, right? The very kind of decadent, like nice-looking city that's kind of people call it a bit like Kyoto. But presumably you went over the Japanese Alps then, around the back of Japan.
Yes, went sort of north. Yeah, went north and then west.
Wow.
Yeah, just popped. It doesn't take too long though. It's only like, what was it, 4 hours on the train? There's like a ninja town where the ninjas used to live and the little houses and stuff. You sort of wander around and it was weird. And actually,
I passed through there before. The about 3 or 4 days before I met you, in Kyoto, we passed through there on the cycle. I made a video called one of Japan's greatest markets or something.
Right.
I got there. I've been wanting to go to Kanazawa all my life, which is 6 years in Japan. And I got there and it was raining, the worst rain ever seen by mankind. Like, you went outside with an umbrella and the umbrella just got shredded by the rain. Such was the power and fury of the raindrops. They cut through the bloody umbrella like cutting through a cake. And it was scary. So I couldn't go outside. All I could do is the market. And I was really gutted because the old streets, the ninja village, as you call it, it looks amazing. And I couldn't see it. All this time waiting, I finally got there, only for the weather to screw me. So I've got to go back here again.
Well, I signed up for a little...
my list of things to go back to.
Well, that's the thing about Japan. There's always somewhere else that you sort of haven't been and you sort of explore. I think the... I got myself a little bike. I didn't get enough biking in on our little journey, clearly. So I rented out one of those little kind of public bike initiatives. That's the thing about Japan. You don't see them as... Even though, like, there's bike lanes everywhere and people cycle all over the place and it's a great place to cycle. There's not that many kind of Boris bikes, as we'd call in London. There's no kind of, like... There's not as many kind of public biking initiatives because I guess people who live here already have bikes, so the commuters don't...
I love the way you call it public biking initiative.
Public biking
whereas
initiative.
I just call it rent-a-bike.
Yeah, rental bikes. Or like, you can
public
go to a shop and rent
initiative.
Them. You can go to a shop and rent them, but that would involve me talking to someone, and that wouldn't be it. That wouldn't be a good thing. But actually happens is, like, it would be nice to sort of have one of those things where you just put your credit card into a machine and it just takes it and you rent it for a couple of hours and then pop it back in the same place or a different... a bike stand like we do in London or pretty much every city in the world. I think China tried. I think a lot of Chinese cities tried it, but they ended up either getting stolen or just thrown in the river, which I quite liked.
I saw a photo in China of a pile of like 10,000 bikes that people had just stolen or unused in a big pile. Don't get your hopes up about using your credit card for a Boris bike. You can't even use your credit card in Japan to pay for petrol or gasoline.
Oh, really?
It's ridiculous, yeah. There have been points of this trip we've had to use the car to go to some places and we stopped for some petrol, pulled out a Visa debit card or a Visa credit card, and the staff just sort of say, Nanikore, what's this? And it's like, this is a credit card. And they're like, no, cash only. What are you on about? You're spending like $60 on fuel for your car and you can't use a credit card. What is that?
That is pretty crazy,
why?
Isn't it?
I mean, doesn't make any bloody sense.
I mean, it just seems weird. As a garage, you probably wouldn't want that much money on the premises, but... God, imagine an armed robber. Like, it must be a dream. Every single shop is just absolutely saturated with cash.
Well, when there was the tsunami, the Tohoku disaster back in 2011, lots of houses were swept away, of course, and there was a big problem because a lot of elderly people that live in that region had stored all their cash under their beds, right? So the houses got washed away. Everything got washed away, including their money. Mm. So it caused a lot of damage economically to the area. A lot of people lost a lot of money, so cash is good on the surface, but if something happens to your house, which is effectively your bank if you're putting all your money under a bed, then it's not such a happy ending after all.
Yeah, I imagine that sort of wiped off a lot of a huge percentage of that area's, you know, money, I suppose. I mean, would that
GDP
cause...
GDP of Tohoku.
Yeah, would that not cause some kind of blipping inflation or something? I don't know.
I'm not economically... intelligent enough to discuss that, but
no,
what I do know
certainly
is
not at 9 o'clock
money
in the
was
morning.
Swept away.
Money was lost.
But going back to the tattoo, I forgot.
Yes.
The thing with the tattoo is I always wanted one, right? I always knew I wanted one, but I didn't know what I wanted to get. And it's a hard decision. Presumably it wasn't too hard for you, because you've got two.
Yeah,
they're quite bespoke.
I've got like five of them, and none of them I really thought them through very, very well.
Really?
No, I didn't.
Well, you just sort of turned up and went, give me Monkey Island.
Give me Monkey
Island.
And
then they did it.
Yeah, they're not really that well thought through, to be quite frank, but yeah.
I think my greatest fear is getting a tattoo, right? And then 10 years later just going, oh, I don't want that now because it doesn't seem relevant.
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen people
well,
that put
it depends on where you get it, I suppose,
you know,
isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose. The tattoo I'm thinking of getting is a Japanese proverb.
Okay.
Back in, and the reason I'm thinking of getting a proverb is back in 3 or 4 years ago, I was dealing with anxiety issues because I was discovering YouTube and having loads of weird people tell me I was rubbish online,
yeah.
Combined with the stresses of dealing with 40 school kids every day for 6 hours on end. I just had this weird period where I wasn't in a good place. And I studied some philosophy, and I studied Stoic philosophy, and it helped me get back on track. But one of the things I did was I would go through books, and I would take quotes that were really powerful or really meant something to me, and I would write them down, and I would read them over every morning, right, until they were burnt firmly into my thinking. Kind of like, almost like a religious practice, I guess.
Like, you know, a mantra.
Ritualising it, yeah, having a mantra, reading it over. And so I thought that would be something quite nice to have. And I came across this proverb last week called, it's literally kishikaise, which means to recover from the brink of death or to recover from a hopeless situation. Now, one of the quotes I used to overcome my anxiety was, I can't remember it because it is 9 a.m. in the morning and I haven't drunk enough coffee, but it was something along the lines of any situation can be flipped to your advantage, right? Any situation that may not look good on the surface can be flipped and bring some sort of benefit. Quick example, actually, of that. I was filming this beautiful spot in Kagoshima just yesterday, overlooking Sakurajima, the smoking volcano. It's a volcano in the Bay of Kagoshima City, and it's smoking 24 hours a day. It's an incredible sight.
Wow.
And I went up there to film the end of the cycle, right, because that was the end destination. And we got up there, and there was just like a million Chinese people that just got off a bus, and it got really annoying, because I just want... There was pockets of time when there was nobody there. And we'd get out the camera, we'd get rolling, and then a crowd of people just come into my shot, quite literally push me out of the way of my own shot to start taking photos. It was quite annoying. And so I was getting really frustrated. I was waiting for the crowd to go. And then I had an idea. I pulled out my iPhone and I filmed it again. But this time I made it look like I was battling through the crowd, being really sarcastic. So I was like, I said something along the lines of, I've been travelling for 60 days, waiting for this moment, building up to this moment, battling through wind and rain across mountain ranges, and here it is, Sakurajima. And then pan the camera up to reveal 1,000 people standing there. And then I was just battling through the crowd. And it turned into this quite a funny little sarcastic sequence, a really anticlimactic sarcastic sequence, where you can't actually see Sakurajima. You can just see 1,000 people and me battling through it. And that's going to be the start of the video now.
And
actually, it got to the point that I liked this opening so much, I filmed it 3 or 4 times. And I didn't want the crowd to go. And they started to leave, go back to the bus. And I was like, no, come back. And it was, so it's a complete reversal, a complete flipping of the situation, right? Mm. It went from me wanting to get rid of the people and have my nice big space where I could shoot the view, to actually wanted to keep the people there and use them for the opening sequence. And there's sort of situations like that throughout my life that have cropped up where things look bad and annoying, but you look at it from another angle, you look at it from another perspective, and there's an advantage there. There's some sort of hidden benefit.
And
anyway, I saw that proverb, kishikaise. Yeah, but I saw that proverb, kishikaise, which is just 4 Japanese kanji characters that look rather nice. And it kind of sums up that situation rather well. So I want to get that phrase on my forearm, on my inner arm, and I can look down at it every morning, every evening, or every afternoon. Whenever I'm in a bad or tough situation, I can look down at it and remind myself that for all the difficult situations I've battled through, not just in this cycle, but in general, I can always recover from that hopeless situation. There's always recovery. There's always a chance to get back up and keep going. And it's a really nice proverb. There's 4 characters. The first character is the character to wake up. If you look at the word okiru, to wake up, it's the kanji to wake up, to get back up. The second character is the one for death, shinu. The third character represents time, many times. And the fourth character represents life, rebirth, which is the character you see for the word ikiru. So it's 4 characters, and it's nice because I see why people have Japanese proverbs and Chinese characters written on their arms now, because it's much more eloquent than having an actual sentence, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know how I would have that sentence put on my arm in English. It would just be a bit awkward and cumbersome to have, recover from the brink of death, recover from a hopeless situation. It just wouldn't be nice, would it?
It's always like, it's always people who like have like song lyrics. It's always like the Libertines or something on their arm. They always sort of say that Chinese characters and Japanese kanji, it's the most efficient lettering system in the world, because obviously you can fit so much more in to a very small space. And if you sort of go to any sort of museum that's got like both Japanese kanji, when I was in where was I? I think it was Kobe at the at the art museum, because when I left you and went back to Tokyo, I thought, you know what, we didn't spend that long in Kobe, did we? Because we had to get halfway up the mountain to get into our log cabin.
That's right.
And then I had to run off, so we popped back again to hang out with my mate Rich, and he and me went to like went to the earthquake museum, because obviously Kobe was destroyed by an earthquake. Yeah, back in the completely. Was it the 80s or the 90s? Either way, it was
1995, I want to say.
Yeah, I mean, some of the things that happened there, my God, I cannot imagine any city being able to get back on its feet after that, especially one as big as Kobe.
Absolutely. But more importantly, did the Earthquake Museum have an earthquake simulator?
It did have an earthquake simulator. To be honest, they loved they had a lot of there are a lot of kind of videos you had to watch, and I'm not sure whether we actually experienced the earthquake simulator. We experienced a video that was pretty harrowing, to be quite frank, pretty horrible. But
well, it can be difficult to appreciate what it's like being in an earthquake. I often forget, even though I experience it on average once every 2 or 3 months, maybe. But earthquake simulators are quite a good way of putting it into, well, just getting a sense of what it actually feels like. Yeah. You stand on it and then the whole room starts moving.
Yeah.
And I do believe I saw a photo of the one at the Kobe Earthquake Museum being really super sophisticated.
It was just sort of seeing entire, it was like something out of film. It was like something out of like a Godzilla film. It was like watching these fairly large kind of, you know, 10, 20 story buildings, not even collapsing, just leaning on another building, you know, across a street, just kind of, it's like, it looked like it was having a rest over onto the other side. It really was something else. It was awful. I mean, you know, give it a Google if you want, but I mean, yeah, I can't imagine how any sort of city gets on. It was September 11th kind of size. It killed a lot of people.
We talked about this, didn't we? How Kobe hadn't built a lot of buildings in Kobe were quite old. They weren't up to the standards, the earthquake proof standards of the time. So they were susceptible to seismic damage, and hence a lot of the city was destroyed.
Yeah.
But Japan seems to be a lot stronger now. There was, of course, the earthquake. It was a pretty hefty earthquake earlier this year in Osaka, which, again, we talked about. And, I don't think there was any... I think there was one or two casual fatalities, but for the most part, the city was intact. The most remarkable thing for me, if you look at the... There's great footage online of it. If you go on the internet and you type in 2011 earthquake Japan, Shinjuku, the skyscraper district in Shinjuku, which contains about a dozen skyscrapers... It's incredible. They're swaying like up to a foot each, and it's an incredible sight. Just seeing these 150-meter skyscrapers just swinging in the sky, both terrifying and incredible. structurally intact as well. They're built to do that naturally. But I wouldn't want to be up one when it's happening.
Really would not want
to. Put the fear of God into me. Yeah, being in a swing. Yeah.
But, I mean, so have you got an idea of who's going to be tattooing your arm? Have you got an idea who's where you're going to get it done?
I haven't got that far yet, no. I haven't. There's a few places in Sendai. I could do it back in the UK. I'm not sure yet. And it's not something I'm going to do for another few months.
Right.
Because I want to get the design done. I don't just want to have a proverb on my arm. I kind of want to have some artwork around it.
Yeah.
And this is an exclusive to the Abroad Japan podcast. I haven't actually talked about this anywhere else. This is the first time. But if you guys have any ideas on how it could be better than just a proverb, in terms of artwork, what would you put around it? I'm curious. If you're going to have a proverb on your arm in four Japanese characters, what would you have around it? Some of my friends have suggested having some kind of flowers. I want something a bit more bold. I was thinking of having some sort of slot machine. You know, slot machines, we have to pull the handle. And the... and it turns and reveals your prize. I thought something like that. Then I thought it could be a bit tacky. I don't know. I've got to think of it through. I don't want to rush it because it's going to be there until the end of time on my arm.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And to my surprise, I stumbled across a secret, sexy club.
Wow.
I wouldn't overthink it. I know mine are a bit silly. I mean, I have had a tattoo done in Japan by a guy in his house. I think we've spoken about it before. And it's kind of like... it's like a woman. Do you remember? You probably don't remember the video game "Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?" But like, kind of like a Carmen Sandiego, a woman in a sort of like a fancy hat, like a trilby or something, and her face is a Japanese mountain range with a red sun behind it. And it's
wait, you've got that tattoo?
Yeah, I've got that tattoo on the back of my leg.
Have I seen that?
No, I don't think you have. We haven't been showing each other our. To be fair, though, we were cycling, and I was wearing shorts pretty much most of the time. So,
I just think I don't look at your legs that much, Pete.
No,
I've seen the Monkey Island one numerous occasions, but yeah, I tend not to stare at your legs too much. I'm afraid
it's like staring at the sun, mate.
For better or worse. But yeah, it's something I want to get on my arm. I want to get it done the next few months, and I'm really looking forward to it. I could have done with it the other night. I nearly had a mental breakdown on like the last night of the cycle because I had to film. It was about 11 p.m. and I realised I had to get up at like 6 a.m. the next day, and I couldn't go to bed till 2 a.m. until because I was editing. And lots of things hit me at once. And I did that thing that all people should not do, which is when you are angry or upset or at an emotional peak, stay the hell away from Twitter. I did the classic thing. I went on Twitter and I wrote some whinging stuff about how frustrated and stressed I was, and then those people commented, and I woke up and I was like, oh god, why did I write that? And then I deleted it. It was something along the lines of, there's a fine line between challenging yourself and damaging... What was it? There's a fine line between challenging yourself and damaging your health, and I've crossed it. After this cycle, I'm going to hide away for 2 months, or something really dramatic and silly. And I woke up the next morning, I was like, why the hell did I write that? Instead, if I had the tattoo on my arm, I could have looked down at my arm in my hour of frustration and darkness and gone, oh yeah, I'll bounce back from this. But I didn't have that, so I wrote on Twitter. Have you ever done that? Have you ever, like, burst onto Twitter, written something you later regret?
Yeah, I mean, but it's usually stupid stuff, or I get quite chatty when I'm a bit pissed off. it's never tiredness. It's always just like, hee hee, I'm drunk, so I get a bit chatty. But like, it's I always find like the I don't know why, but like, if you ever broken up with a girl or anything like that, or a boy, or you know, whatever relationship you're in, it's always the worst at night, and then you wake up the next day and you're like, ugh, what was I worried about? And I think you can't really sort of pull away from your feelings at that point in the day, but yeah, just definitely stay away from social media.
It's
because
dangerous.
You'll sound quite mad.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of people do it. I've noticed it, a lot of people damage their brand over time by just going on Twitter every time they're angry or upset.
And, yeah,
you know, I've got 40,000-50,000 people that follow me on there. It could go horribly wrong. Sometimes when I wake up with a hangover, the first thing I do is go straight to the phone and think, oh God,
what did
I
go
on Twitter last night, did I?
What did I do?
But luckily, it wasn't that bad. I got rid of them. And yeah, I woke up feeling happy.
It's
that moment of like anger and frustration. You just got to get over it, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of like, I think also there's been a few sort of think pieces and kind of like, not studies, but people have been talking
think
about
pieces.
Like sort of like YouTube burnout and stuff, like people who feel pressured to, you know, put out, the people who sort of vlog every day and stuff, the people who sort of feel duty bound that they have to, or they don't earn, you know, they're probably not, you know, as well known as certain other YouTubers, so they just feel they have to constantly churn out content. And it's difficult because, like, you know, I've watched your cycle, so to speak, your cycle sort of off screen.
My cycle.
Stuff.
My actual bike cycle, or my cycle as in
the cycle as in
life?
Just sleep cycle and work cycle and stuff. And I witnessed it for a couple of days on the bike ride. Sharla, who was also on the bike ride briefly as well. Like, you know, you're both filming all the time. And when you're not filming, you're editing. And when you're not editing, you're either thinking of stuff to do, or, you know, worrying about YouTube analytics and, you know, whether your video is going to get demonetized and stuff like that. It's a cycle that I think some people find it very pressurizing. And you know, I think putting out videos every day or every other day, nightmare, absolute nightmare situation. Worst job in the world.
Yeah, it has taken the fun out of it a bit. But that said, I'm kind of happy with every single week. I never thought we'd make, you know, 36 videos in a row, day after day. Granted, yeah. I haven't put them out daily. I haven't been coming out daily at all. But we've got the videos, and I'm really excited. Certainly, they'll be all done by January, I think. And it's so cool, the idea that people can sit down, they can put on the series, and they can just watch 36 days of adventure through Japan and get a sense of scale on the trip and, you know, feel like they've experienced and seen Japan themselves. So that's why I've taken longer on the videos to try and edit them and give them a decent production quality. But it's stressful because a lot of people bombard me saying, where's the next video? Where's the next video? Because they want to see it. They're excited. As I want to see the next. I want to see the next video. You're in the next video. It's great, Pete.
Yeah, I'm in the next video.
I haven't had time in between cycling and filming the next video. I just haven't had time to sit down and edit. And then you get people commenting and... I think some comment threw me over the edge. Some guy was like, I've been really disappointed by these videos. I thought it was going to be X, Y, Z, and I lost it after that a bit.
But the thing that gets me is, like, just push them towards the podcast. You get a podcast every week, guaranteed, 20 to 30 minutes to 40 minutes to 50 minutes long, and you get a dose of Chris with a side order, an unwanted side order of me. So if you want a bit of guaranteed Chris Broad content every week, come to Daddy Podcast. This is the only place you'll see him every single week, guaranteed. So there we go.
All this talk of side orders has reminded me of one thing I ate the other day.
Okay.
A pizza from a vending machine. Now, remember a few months ago, we talked about this groundbreaking discovery in Hiroshima, this pizza vending machine. I did it. In the video, which is coming out, I had my friend Ellen come and join me for a few days of the cycle, and I was acting as her tour guide in the videos and on the journey across Japan. And I was showing Ellen around, and we went to the Atomic Bomb Dome, we went to the Miyajima Shrine, we went to all these historic places, and then I went and took her to a pizza vending machine, the first in Japan. and it wasn't as bad as you think. The pizza, it takes about 5 or 10 minutes to make. You go up to the screen, you choose if you want the four cheese pizza or a standard, like mozzarella and tomato. And we just got the standard one. And we stood there for about 4 or 5 minutes as it's made, as it's like baked in this oven. And it comes out in a box. And it wasn't bad. It was a lot better than I was expecting. It is a 6 out of 10. It was edible. It was slightly beyond edible. And that was the surprising thing. You know, right. It actually tasted pretty good. Because it was oven-baked and not microwaved,
yeah.
It actually had a nice texture. The dough, in particular, was really nice. But incredibly, as we were standing there, we were in a queue. Because there was people waiting there to do this. So this was... It must have been about 10 o'clock at night when we got there. And it's out the front of a DVD rental shop, the Blockbuster of
most
Japan.
Most of it goes together.
An industry that's long since died in most places in the world. But in Japan, people still love to rent DVDs from shops in person. And so couples were coming along, renting their DVD, and then getting their vending machine pizza. And it's quite a cool setup. It's quite a good idea. Like, I could see how that could work. Like, if Blockbuster Video had been that smart, their shops might still be intact.
Well,
but,
and also you can have recreational marijuana in a lot of US states, so I mean, I think that would be perfect for them.
Exactly. But no, it's surprisingly good. Blew me away.
Yeah.
And you'll see that in the video when it comes out soon.
Well, I can't wait, Chris.
I guess that's pretty much it for now though, guys. I'll be back in my apartment next week, so things will be back on track. And Pete and I next week will be going through the inbox, through the fax machine of emails you guys have sent in. There are so many that have built up, so many great ones I've been looking through. I can't wait to sit down and answer them. We're going to have a full podcast just answering your questions. And if you have any more questions or ideas on what I should do for my tattoo, go ahead and drop us a line at abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back same time next week to discuss that then. But for now, guys, no matter where you might be listening from out there in the big wide world, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Have a good one.
Bye-bye. I'm whispering because it's midnight.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.